Session number 4463, Reel 3.
General Dove, Reel 3. What did your brother officers think of the Special Night Squads?
As far as I can recollect, they were very impressed with them. They seemed to do their work all right. As I've said, they kept the Arabs under control at night. It didn't stop Arab bands functioning during the day, and of course strong Arab bands could get together. And in fact, we had one quite strong Arab band we chased for about 6 weeks round until we finally caught it, and I think the leader got killed, and quite a number of others.
How big were these Arab bands usually?
Sometimes they're quite small, just about 8 or 10 men. I think that particular one that I'm talking about must have been quite a sizable one, probably about 50 or 60 men. It started by ambushing a company of the Ulster Rifles who were coming up through the Musmus Pass. We had the first contact with it there. And at a place called Umel Farm, the wireless had broken down, and we got reports that back at brigade headquarters that fighting was going on, and I went into the signal center just about the same time as Brigadier Evitz did, and we both found that this action was in progress. Some reports had come through, and we had then a system of what we known as XX calls from which were calls by which an XX, the signal XX, and the map reference was sent out, and immediate air support was sent to that area. Brigadier Evitz found out that no XX call had been sent out on this, so he sent one out himself from brigade headquarters with the map reference of Oil Farm when this action was taking place. And the RAF flight turned up, spotted the Arabs, dropped some bombs there, and that helped the company of the Ulster Rifles out of their difficulties.
Was there much cooperation with the RAF?
Oh yes, very close cooperation.
How did it work?
It worked very well. The XX call was brought aircraft usually to the spot within a few minutes. Of course, distances were quite short in Palestine.
Coming back to the Arab gangs, what type of men composed them? From what type of background were they?
I really honestly don't know. I suppose they were just ordinary Arabs from the villages who tended to be politically motivated to some extent, or perhaps just wanted to scrap.
So they were rural rather than urban Arabs?
I think they were primarily rural Arabs, yes. They seemed to be quite used to moving about in the country, at any rate.
Were they all very young men, or of different ages?
I should say young to middle-aged.
And what about the leaders? Were they headmen of villages, or religious leaders, or what?
There would be more headmen of villages than all prominent people in the villages. Sheikh Farhan, which I quoted before, had been a sergeant in the police force, actually. He'd had some military training, semi-military training. In the early days, when I first joined the brigade, an Iraqi leader was the most prominent one, named Fawzi al-Kawakji. We tried to catch him, but we had to call off the operation, and political reasons, he was allowed to go back to Iraq. I think possibly some Syrians came over too and helped. They certainly got arms from Syria, which is why we had more trouble in the north of Palestine than they did in the south.
Were there any sections of the Palestine population, apart from the Jews, of course, from whom you got help in pursuing the insurgents?
No, I don't think so. I think it was left to us to collect what information we could. There was centrally organized a special service section, which the local representative was a flight lieutenant of Sofiano in our area. He had sources of information, I don't know quite what. We had our own brigade intelligence section, our own interpreter, who managed to pick up a certain amount of information.
How did he do that?
By going amongst the local Arabs, chatting to them and so forth. He was an Arab himself, see. He was eventually caught and killed, as a matter of fact.
Under what circumstances?
He'd gone to visit a village about, on his own, to visit a village about 10 miles from Haifa, and I think there were some bandits in the village who recognized him, I think, and shot him. We caught a gang later on in that area, but whether they were the people responsible or not, I don't know.
Did you find that the Muslim religious leaders were sympathetic to the insurgents' cause or opponents of it?
Very much sympathetic. They were the prime instigators of the Arab revolt, such as it was, the insurgents. The Mufti in Jerusalem was the nigger in the wood pile, really. He had his Arab power committee, and he was out for political dominance.
You said that they were the instigators. Did this include the local level clergy, like the local mullahs in the villages?
That I don't really know. As far as I can recollect, the instigation to the religious instigation was central rather than local.
What about the Christian Arabs and bodies of people like the Druze? Did they support the insurgency or not?
I don't think so. I don't think they did, no. I can't remember that we ever had any trouble around Nazareth, where there were quite a number of Christian Arabs. And, of course, the Druze are really in Lebanon rather than in Palestine.
Can you tell me what the setup at brigade headquarters was?
Well, there was the brigadier in command. There was the brigade major, who acted as sort of chief of staff, with staff captain, who was responsible for the administrative side, and an intelligence officer, brigade intelligence officer, and a signals officer. We had eventually two signals officers, as a matter of fact. We had an expanded signal section. And apart from that, one just had the drivers, cooks, batmen, and signal staff. It's quite a small setup, really.
Was there great pressure of work on you?
Well, one was constantly... one was under active service conditions. One was constantly on call. The pressure of work wasn't undue.
So you weren't under undue strain?
No.
Earlier on, we were talking about the work of Vaud Wingate, but you didn't give any estimate of Wingate as a personality. What was your impression of him?
He was certainly a curious personality. He was unorthodox. He was obviously a strong character, and I'd have said he thought quite deeply. He'd certainly worked out his tactics for the Special Night Squads in very considerable detail, and what he'd proposed worked. He didn't seem to me to be particularly soldierly from the Barrack Square point of view. I remember him coming into my office. My recollection of him was that he had no badges of rank on his shirt, although one could see where they had been, the captain's badges, that his helmet, his sun helmet which he was wearing, had no band around it, that his shoes were dirty, one stocking was down around one shoe, and generally looking a bit dishevelled. But then, of course, he may well have been sleeping rough in a Jewish settlement the previous night.
What did your brother officers think of him? Was he popular?
I think he was with the ones who he trained in the Special Night Squads, yes. I think they thought him capable and quite prepared to follow his lead, certainly.
What was the mobile column system which you adopted in Palestine?
Well, when we started after the Whitehead Commission had really recommended that partition shouldn't go ahead, and the Arab rebellion started up again, the brigadier decided the best way of dealing with our problem in northern Palestine was to have a series of mobile columns which could be moved very quickly around the brigade area. The men travelled in lorries. Each column consisted of a small headquarters with two or three platoons, and the battalion could produce possibly one, possibly two, three or four mobile columns according to its strength and what other tasks it had to do. Each mobile column had a lorry in which we put, I think, eight donkeys, so that when the column came to a place where it could no longer move by road or by track, it could get on its feet and go off and support itself for three or four days with its donkey transport, on which it could carry the necessary wireless sets, spare equipment, water if need be, food, and so forth to keep it going. This worked quite effectively, and with the use of these small wireless sets, we could always keep contact with the mobile columns and divert them from place to place as needed. We worked out alternative plans, in our brigade area for about six different, covering about six different areas, by which we could, on sending out a code word, we could get those areas surrounded by mobile columns from the most convenient units. the columns could then work inwards towards each other and try and trap any bandits that were within that area. After the Ormel Farm episode, which I mentioned, we lost track with that with that band of troublemakers, and we searched the area between that and Jenin for some 6 weeks before we eventually got contact with it again using mobile columns, going out on any information that we got of contact. And also at that time I think we had some a mounted section from the Transjordan Frontier Force also came over and joined in as an additional mobile column.
How did you find the Transjordan Frontier Force? Did you find that they gave invaluable help to you or not?
Oh yes, very useful indeed. That particular column, as far as I can remember, was commanded by Captain or Major Hackett, which is now General Sir John Hackett.
Why were they so useful?
Well, they were mounted to start with. We had no mounted troops. And, of course, you can cover quite considerable distances on horseback there. And they were local. They had, of course, being local people who knew the type of country, even though the other side of the Jordan, I think they, speaking Arabic, of course, they could often get information which and find out things which our British columns couldn't.
Was there much cooperation with the local police?
Oh yes, the local police, we cooperated very closely with them and got, of course, quite a lot of information came from them. In fact, we had a police inspector living in our mess, in our brigade headquarters mess at Haifa.
What, were the personnel of the police force British?
They had, no, they the officers were British, but the police, they had quite a number of British, or British policemen, and also they had Arabs in the police.
What about Jews?
I think they were quite loyal. My recollection is that they may have had Jews, but I can't honestly remember. They probably did in the police, where the police were working amongst Jewish settlements. And that's in the particular Jewish areas.
Did you feel that the number of men and the type of equipment that you had in Palestine was adequate for the job?
Number of men, of course, one could always have done with more. Type of equipment one could always have done with better equipment, but there wasn't any better equipment at those times. I think we had as efficient equipment as there was available.
In what ways would you have liked it to have been better if it had been possible?
Oh well, of course, wireless communication would have helped. Better wireless communication would have helped a lot. The number one sets, the signals did remarkably well with the number one sets, which weren't designed to cover the distances that we used them over. One could have done with things like mine detectors and so forth. In fact, we tried an elementary mine detector out there, which was very cumbersome and I don't think was much value.
Who invented that?
Well, I got the. I took my ideas to a friend of mine when I was home on leave, and a friend of my father's. He put me on to Imperial College, and Imperial College designed it and produced a specimen apparatus which was sent out. Worked on the same sort of principle as the Polish mine detector.
But it was too big and unwieldy.
It was too unwieldy, yes.
Was a policy of internment used against Arab suspects, or did you have to take? Did people have to be taken to the through the normal course of the processes of the law courts?
As far as I can recollect, we hadn't a policy of internment. We certainly had no internment camps. occasionally, columns would pick up people and take them to an interrogation center for questioning, often their own local intelligence officer, battalion intelligence officer. If they rarely could find any evidence against them, of course, they were then taken up before the military courts.
How did they react under interrogation? Did they speak easily, or were they taciturn?
I don't really know, I'm afraid, because I never had to carry out any interrogation myself.
I think that you said that you trained watchmen for Jewish settlements.
Yes, we did. We started to, and we got the impression then that the Jews needed defending, that they couldn't do very much about defending themselves. I remember the East Yorkshire Regiment, Nathania, training some Jewish watchmen. The commanding officer, Colonel Hawksworth, later General Hawksworth, told a corporal with this party to take up a defensive position round some huts, see how he'd get on, came back half an hour later and couldn't find them. He found them underneath the hut. when he got them out and hauled the corporal out and asked him why he'd gone there, he said, well, if it's the safest place, because we thought that probably the Arabs wouldn't find us here. But when Wingate, of course, got busy with his special night squads, we found that the Jews could produce people of very different calibre.
I think that you said that on one occasion an Arab insurgent was discovered behind a wall.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
I think that was Sheikh Farhan. Yes, the officer in charge of that party had... he spoke good Arabic. I think he'd been in the Sudan with the Sudan Defence Force. Sorry. And he had come to the conclusion that he must be somewhere hidden in the wall of the house. Some of the walls of the house, of those houses, were double, and they used the interstices as grain stores. So he was quite convinced that this particular chap was in that house, that he hadn't been able to escape out of the net round the village. And so he got his soldiers, to put on their, fix their bayonets, and prod the wall at 1 foot intervals right away through the inner wall. They hadn't got very far before there was a shriek, and this particular chap had had a bayonet through his leg. That was how he was caught.
What was the attitude of you and your brother officers towards the various Jewish organizations existing in Palestine at the time?
Quite friendly. We'd had no real contact on the political level. I did visit Colonel Kish, who was a sapper officer who had retired as a colonel, and who was later re-employed and was chief engineer in the Western Desert. He was a very nice chap, and he was associated with the some of the Jewish organizations. I was also attended concerts with the Palestine Orchestra, which of course was Jewish. I remember Toscanini conducting on one occasion. I had sat next to the permanent conductor at dinner one night. And on the whole, we were on quite friendly terms with them.
You said earlier on that in 1937 the situation in Palestine improved because of Arab hopes regarding the Peel Commission. Did that period of quiescence last?
It lasted until the Peel Commission report came out, which I think was in May 1937. For a little bit longer, because the Whitehead Commission was then sent out to try and tidy up the ends that the Peel Commission had left loose. For example, the Peel Commission, as far as I can recollect, had recommended that there should be mandated areas of Jerusalem, Haifa, and Nazareth. The Whitehead Commission came out to try and, amongst other things, define the boundaries of the area. They decided in the end that many of these problems that the Peel Commission had left were in fact insurmountable, and that no viable partition arrangement could be made. Well, as soon as that became known, then of course all the trouble started again. At the time of the Peel Commission report, I certainly got the impression, and I think many other people did, that a partition scheme, if immediately implemented, would have been welcomed on both sides. The Arabs would have considered that it would stop any further Jewish penetration into the Arab areas. That, of course, would have been quite definite. The Jews consider that it would at last have given them an autonomous area as their national home, and the mandated areas would be accepted as keeping an independent presence there to see that the arrangements were properly implemented.
What do you think were the successes or failures of the British presence in Palestine?
That's a difficult question. Obviously, we didn't succeed in producing a plan which satisfied both the Arabs and the Jews. So I suppose our presence there was a failure. But from that point of view. But whether anybody could have done anything better, I don't know.
Do you think that in any ways the British military presence in Palestine was a good thing for the country?
I think it was at the time, because I think we were probably as much able to keep the peace as anybody else. We kept the military activity fairly well under control. The work of the ordinary person in the country was able to go on pretty normally.
When did you leave Palestine?
I left Palestine in the middle of 1938.
Under what circumstances?
Well, I was posted to another job at the War Office.
Were you sorry to leave Palestine?
I was, yes. I was very happy in the work that I was doing there, and I was on the whole, so quite sorry to leave.
Was it a good place to live, quite apart from the work?
Oh, yes. It was quite a pleasant, on the whole, quite a pleasant climate. Could be hot, could be a bit cold sometimes. Of course, one wasn't living in any very great comfort, but quite reasonable conditions.
Did you ever feel apprehensive for your own safety in the time you were in Palestine?
No, I don't think so. One had to go about armed, of course. But One didn't, except during the period when there was absolutely nothing happening at all while the Peel Commission was reporting. You never went about alone.
Who did you go about?
At least, not if you were going outside your immediate area. I used to go off for walks myself, as a matter of fact, now I come to think of it. Short walks when I was at Nablus, I used to go off scrambling up Mount Gerizim for a little afternoon exercise, and used to walk over Mount Carmel in the afternoon when I was at Haifa.
You say you didn't go around alone, but who did you go around with?
Either another officer or one would go off with an armed escort.
And what arms did you carry?
.22 automatic pistol. .32 automatic pistol.
Did you ever have to use it?
No. Wait a minute. Yes, I did once, as a matter of fact. On two occasions. Once a loose donkey came across the suddenly bolted across the road, and our escort truck ran into it and broke its leg, and I had to kill the donkey and put it out of its misery. Another occasion we saw an armed Arab a little way off the road carrying a weapon. And I did have a pot shot at him with my revolver, but again, I think the bullet went anywhere near him.